The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. Yes, it's not the dulcet tones of Seth Liebson's voice emanating from your speakers. It is Hugh Hallman joined by Lewis Hallman. We've been talking earlier today about what's going on in the world, specifically how I call it the axis of evil and Lewis calls it
anti-Western authoritarianism.
There we go, the new modern term. But we are going to take a break from the international political scene in its current state to bring to you one of our most remarkable leaders in our state. He is the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Ben Toma, who hails to us from Romania and has an origin story that I can verify, having researched it myself, to be factual. Unlike the current controversy surrounding our president, that his origin story has been completely made up of whole cloth, we have somebody who has demonstrated through a character and quality that he deserves our attention, and he is led with true great insight and courage. And so, ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure and honor to introduce to you the Speaker of the Arizona House of Representatives, Ben Toma. Mr. Speaker?
It is always a pleasure to be here, and especially a pleasure to be with you fine gentlemen this afternoon.
Oh, jeepers. I don't know that you know us that well, at calling us a gentleman. So, Mr. Speaker, I mentioned in the build-up here and at the end of the last hour that you have an origin story that isn't unique to Americans, but I think is unique to someone who's risen to the position you're in, and it informs your leadership style and what you focus on. Would you mind telling your story and tell our listeners about yourself and what brings you here?
Sure. We've had this conversation before. I'm not quite sure who's all aware of it, but I think it's important to start at the beginning. And I was born in 1978 in what was then communist Romania. Actually in the capital of Transylvania, which I'm sure your leaders and your listeners have heard of. I didn't know it was spooky until we came here, so there's that.
It seemed just normal to you at the time.
It just seemed normal at the time. Correct. I still remember we lived in a very small town. When I was seven, I remember the secret police started to come and visit us to talk to mom and dad, and they started to interrogate my dad in particular. And they started showing up multiple times, and I remember them coming three or four times at the very least, and it could have been more than that. And mom and dad knew what could likely happen under communist authoritarian regime, as was mentioned a second ago, and so they decided to take a risk and to flee the country. They were not.
And what was the motivation behind the secret police investigating your parents? What's your understanding of that?
My understanding is that, it's kind of funny. In communism, nobody particularly cares unless you're capable and when you become a threat. And that's what I think my dad did wrong. He was capable. You know, if you remember, under communist regime, all private property was seized and centralized. And each family was given maybe like half an acre around their home to grow a garden or whatever. But then the rest of the land was all communally held. And so there were these large communal farms that were set up Chape or collective, anyway, and so my dad's job as the agriculture engineer was to run this farm, which is to say, effectively run the town, because virtually everybody worked there, since everything was taken, you know, including livestock and everything else.
And it turns out he was too good at his job.
Yes, and that was the mistake. And having come from in that particular district, having become from dead last to number three or four in just three or four years. Was his mistake, and all of a sudden, he became visible in a way that he was never visible before. The blade that stands up is the one that gets cut, type of thing, and that was very true under communism, and that's what got him the attention that we didn't want. So anyway, they took the risk. They decided to flee the country, and They couldn't take us with because they didn't get approval to take the children. The idea being that, you know, they would have a reason to come back. But mom and dad decided not to come back. They ended up in a refugee camp outside of Istanbul.
I'm going to get into a little detail. So your parents leave. Were they leaving sort of on a tourist visa? They were heading out to take a tour and then recognize that they couldn't come back.
Correct. Yeah. So
if they
actually
did, they would be at risk, and having gotten themselves out, now they need to get the children out.
And what year is this? Just for
this was 1986.
So under my Romanian's term, Ceausescu.
Ceausescu. That's right. Hey, it's better than most. Ceausescu. Right. So this was in I want to say the spring, maybe early May of 1986, and then so they left and they took the risk and they ended up in a refugee camp outside.
And you're now 8 years old.
Seven. I was seven when they left.
Your siblings?
So my sister was five. I had a brother that was maybe three and a brother that was two, almost two at this point. And anyway, grandma and aunts and uncles came a few weeks after they didn't come back and decided to move us out, at which point they found on the back of a painting a letter from my mom explaining that they weren't going to come back. And so obviously they had told no one ahead of time. They made their way, like I said, they ended up in a refugee camp outside of Istanbul for, I don't know, 7.5, 8 months, something like that. And then another 3 months outside of Rome. They got some sort of approval. They got moved to Rome. And then from there, they came to the U.S., at which point this was, I want to say, right about a year later, so May-ish of 1987. They were told that it was going to be 2 to 3 years at a minimum before there was any chance of being reunited with us. But God is good and merciful, and somehow, inexplicably, and nobody really knows how to this day, we were told and given four passports and told by the communist powers at the time that we had 5 days to leave the country as kids. So my mom told the U.S. government, who did not believe her, and they thought she was delusional and that there was no chance this was happening. And so they didn't wait for us, but my grandma put us on a plane to JFK.
Four children now, ages 3, 4, 6, and 8,
so,
approximately.
So I had just turned 9 because my birthday is in July, and this was in late September. It was actually, I think, the very last day of September, because I think our first picture and our first memory of the U.S. was on October 1st, and I still remember looking at that timestamp later. But in any case, of 87. So
your grandmother puts you on a plane.
That's right. So we were to JFK from Bucharest to JFK in New York. But my parents lived in Portland. So the only person that did wait for us was a TWA employee. And that's because they were the connecting flight from New York to Portland. Again, the U.S. government had no idea we were coming. They did not believe my parents. TWA thankfully did, and they ushered us through the process. I don't know what he said because I didn't speak English, but he seemed very friendly, and so we eventually got to Portland.
And your folks were there when you arrived?
They were. This was pre-9/11, remember, so everybody can come to the gate, and there was quite the hoopla. I think the most – obviously, it was bittersweet for us. It was super exciting to come to America for those of us that were older and understood what that meant. But for my little brother, especially my youngest brother, who was basically 1.5 or under that when they left, he honestly didn't recognize my parents. And I think that was really hurtful, especially for my mom. But, you know, we got over it, and, of course, everybody was overjoyed to be reunited.
And so from that point on, how do you end up in Arizona?
So this was in 87, as I said, October, and 96, after about 9 years of gloom and doom and rain and lack of sun, my parents had had enough and decided that they were going to make a major change for the family. And so they picked the sunniest place they could find, and that was Glendale, Arizona. And we've been either in Glendale or Peoria, and now personally I'm back in Glendale. Since 96.
So you were in Oregon soaking up all of the water, and your parents said, we need to have some sunny place we can go. Arizona, it doesn't rain there. It's always sunny, and it'll dry the entire family out.
there's a little
non-alcoholic
more.
Sort of
right. I'm glad you clarified.
So
you know, my mom also, and unfortunately I did as well, suffered from migraines, and so the constant barometric change actually plays into that in the Portland area. So it was that and the fact that really wanted a life change that was good just for health and well-being.
And your parents are still with us?
They're still with us. Yeah, they live about a mile and a half from where I live now. They're actually still in Peoria. Within a month of moving here, I met a beautiful girl. We ended up being friends with a, kind of a group of other people at church. And after about a year, they asked us how long we'd been dating. And then we thought, well, maybe we should date. So we did. And then a year later, we got married. And that's
when people asked you, how long have you been married? And you decided you'd have to do that too?
No. No, we've been married for 25 years, actually. We celebrated that in October, and there's a story to that too. But
well, we'll get to that then. Ladies and gentlemen, you are hearing the tones of Ben Thoma, the Speaker of the House of Representatives. He joins us here on KKNT 960 The Patriot. We want to thank our friend Seth Liebson for allowing us to fill in for him today, and we are looking forward to continuing the conversation. If you're interested in asking the Speaker of the House of Representatives a question, you can give us a call at 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Ain't that cute? We look forward to talking with you, and please do give us a call. Mr. Thoma, thank you for joining us, and we'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. I'm Hugh Hallman, joined by Lewis Hallman, who has not gotten a word in edgewise. So I'm going to open the mic to Lewis to start asking our Speaker of the House questions. Our guest for this hour is Ben Thoma, the Speaker of the Arizona House of Representatives, who's currently running for Congress, in fact, in CD 8, isn't it?
Correct.
Yeah. So, I'm sad about that because he is such a great, remarkable speaker of our House of Representatives. To lose him at that level of leadership is a sad thing. But by the same token, he is a man of great character who is bringing that to everything he does. If you missed his description of his origin story, as I call it, listen to it on the podcast, because how Ben Thoma ends up here informs his every waking hour, I would say, and how he raises his family. So before the break, you started to talk about how you transitioned into what you're doing here and now. I'm going to let Lewis sort of pitch what he'd like to hear as a young voter in that district.
Well, I actually
CD8, that is.
I'd like to ask actually how you see the difference, given that you were just talking about levels of leadership, Dad. I'd like to ask the Speaker sort of how do you see the proper conduct for a state representative, and how is that different from someone that operates at the national level and then at the municipal level? Like, what should you be focused? Like, what should someone at that level be focused on and doing, I guess, is sort of what I'm trying to ask.
Well, I'm not sure that there really should be much of a difference between the way you act in general. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, the subject matter will be different that you're working on. If you're working at, say, the state level versus the federal level, there's going to be certain things that the federal Congress is concerned with that they should be working on. That is different than, say, the issues that we focus on at the state level. And then at the municipal level, again, same thing. You know, you're more worried about making sure the garbage is picked up on time and that there's no potholes in the streets and whatnot. And that's all very important in day-to-day lives of everyone that's living in a particular city. But when it comes to – and on a federal level, obviously, you're talking about things like what they should be doing is focusing on – the border and immigration and some of the fiscal issues that we have way too many problems with. And quite frankly, we keep kicking the can down the road, which just makes it worse. As everybody knows that once you have a fiscal problem, the more you kick the can down the road, the worse the problem gets. And yet somehow we are pretending that somehow magically in the future it's going to get better, which it won't, which is another reason that I'm interested in going to Congress. Not because I particularly love that, but because I think it's important that we get people there that are willing to roll up their sleeves and actually get to work and do the dirty work necessary to fix it. But in terms of the way you approach it, which I think is the heart of your question, I don't think there really is a difference, and there really shouldn't be a difference. And you think about the context of whether you're on a city council or whether you're in the state legislature here in Arizona. There are 60 in the House, for example, 60 members in the House. Most city councils are seven people, but you know, Phoenix is a little bigger, so they have more. But at the federal level, you know, you have 435 in the House, so it's a different number. But the bottom line is still the same. It doesn't matter how righteous your idea is, how right you are, how great and amazing. What matters is, can you convince your colleagues to get on the same page? And so you have to find, at the end of the day, it's basic math. You know, in the context of the state legislature, it's 31 because it's more than half of this House. It's 16 because it's more than half of the Senate. And it's one on the governor's side in order to pass or any bill and to fix any problem.
50% plus one. But your founding in that sort of answer is that you actually believe in a federalist system, that there are things that are appropriate to be handled at the state level and things that are appropriate to be handled at the federal level. Some things might commingle at the state and federal level, but primarily there is a constitution that understood that there are certain things the federal government would be limited to. We have a limited powers constitution that provides Congress with a certain itemized list of things it should do, and everything else under the amendments that were created to cause our Constitution, the Ninth and Tenth Amendment, that all of the remaining power is left to the states. And it sounds like you believe in that.
Wholeheartedly. I mean, again, given the origin story, since you touched on that, it's part of the whole separation of powers idea that you have different things that different people do, and that no one individual state apparatus or office or body or whatever gets final say over everything. I think that's fundamentally flawed. And one of the beauty of our systems, although it can lead to friction between different levels, and often we get accused of preempting this or not preempting that, and all those variables come into play. The net of it all is that it works. And no system is perfect, but ours is pretty good compared to most of the rest of the world.
Well, I will tell you, as an old mayor, you recall that I was on the municipal level for a decent amount of time, that our rule was that there are only fools below us and scoundrels above us. So when you're at the municipal level, it's the scoundrels at the state and federal level. Now that you're at the state, the scoundrels are only the feds, and that the fools are the municipal folks below you. No, my work with the legislature as a mayor and also before and after has demonstrated that we have a remarkable respect, generally speaking, at our state level among our legislators, and how they generally respect municipal issues. I certainly have seen occasion where the state has reached in on issues that legislators want to preempt because somebody's gone off with a policy issue. I'll give you examples. After I left the mayor's seat, we had a council member who was very focused on very statewide issues that she wanted to drive through cities. And the legislature said, nope, stop. We're going to now pass a law that says that's none of your business. It was things like managing dog kennels and the production of animals and those sorts of things. We had prior to that folks who wanted to regulate drugs at a local level. So can you imagine having a drugstore chain, a pharmacy chain across the state, and have every city decide that it's going to regulate pharmacies differently? Those are the kinds of things that cannot work at a city-by-city level. And I think the legislature appropriately stepped in. I've certainly heard the angst and dram by the League of Cities and Towns every time the legislature starts to do something. There are some issues I'm concerned about, but I think, for example, some folks in the legislature wanted to manage zoning issues at a state level and set certain zoning criteria. And at a municipal level, I can tell you, those who wanted to say that cities could not regulate the size of homes on property didn't recognize that they would be beaten about the head and shoulders when folks who own large properties with one-acre tracts of land surrounded by other homes on one-acre tracts of land suddenly find themselves with apartment buildings next to their homes. They didn't spend massive amounts of money to create their home and their sense of peace, only to have somebody decide in a free rider problem, is what an economist would call it, step in and change those rules. What do you want to start with at the federal level that has you most passionate?
Well, first and foremost, the one you have to start with is border security. We have to solve that problem. And we're going to talk about this some more, I'm sure. But the net of it all is you can't fix any of the serious problems related to, say, immigration, the lack of enough employment visas, those types of things, until you actually secure the border. It's incredibly important that we start there, not just for the humanitarian side of this, which, of course, we can have a debate about, but also in addition to that, you talk about fentanyl, human trafficking, a lot of the crime that comes along with that, some of it truly awful stuff. But that's where we have to start.
And your view is we got to start at the border. Let's pick that up when we come back. I'm Hugh Hallman, joined by Lewis Hallman, still hoping to get in a word in edgewise with us. We're on KKNT 960 The Patriot. We're grateful if you'd like to join us. We have Bob from Payson with thoughts for Mr. Toma. Bob, we'll bring you on as soon as we come back. Again, KKNT 960 The Patriot, and we are at 602-508-0960. You can join the conversation. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. I am Lewis Hallman, joined in studio by my father, Hugh Hallman, and our fabulous guest, Speaker Toma. We have got Ben calling from Payson, looking to ask the speaker some questions. Ben, you are on the air.
Yeah, this is Bob in Payson. Ben's in your studio, guys.
Very good, Bob. We're a little slow. It's the B words. You know, we have trouble with the beginning of the alphabet.
Anyway, good afternoon to the Hallamans and Mr. Toma. Excellent program today, guys. I, too, have traveled this world. I want to ask Mr. Toma, with his history of experience, do you, sir, see any similarities between the secret police behind the Iron Curtain of yesterday and the federal police forces in the United States today? For example, the DOJ, who in my opinion is corrupt beyond imagination. Do you see any similarities, sir?
Thanks, Bob. We'll let the speaker answer, and you can just listen on the radio.
You know, it's an interesting point, mostly because there has been some a lot of concerns about the weaponization of some of our agencies, and it's been happening both at the federal level and also at, to some extent, at the state level. As a matter of fact, just today I created an ad hoc committee to look into potential breaches by some of our elected officials here in Arizona. Of course, the irony is that they've accused me of making this as something of a political stunt. The irony, of course, is that's why we're doing it, is because they're making a political statement by some of the investigations that they're so-called using. And look, we have to resist that. Any sort of there are similarities in that sense, that when you start using government and agencies to and you weaponize them against political opponents primarily, instead of letting them focus and making sure that they stay apolitical as much as possible, that's how it starts. And yeah, it's not there yet. I'll be perfectly honest, and I'll admit that they're not there yet. At least largely, not on every issue, but it could easily get there if we allow this to continue. So I think it's a fair point.
Your essence is that, and I think I agree with you completely on this, that we have the signs that people are believing that using government agencies for political purposes is now acceptable, and it's most frightening when it comes in those security services, either the FBI, the CIA, or any of the alphabet groups that we have now protecting the security of the United States. Lewis has certainly become, I would say, the expert on how foreign governments have been seeking to attack our resources and how the U.S. has responded to that. But that very same power by which the U.S. services are protecting us, if turned against us, could be devastating to an open and free society.
Sure. I mean, some of the things that, you know, not to overreact and not just not to overreact, but even like the Patriot Act contains some things in there that concerns me quite a bit, quite frankly, coming from where I've come from. And I get why they did it. And I'm not, you know, again, no one's trying to defend terrorists here that are here scheming to hurt us and to destroy this country. I mean, look what just happened in Russia, for example. So, of course, you have to have countermeasures to that. But also to hold people indefinitely without charging. I mean, I thought we were a rule of law country here, which, you know, it's very concerning.
Sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. If our enemies can be subjected to torture and long-term hold without hearings, so can our friends.
Right. And spying and all that comes with it. I mean, you know, we should be concerned and we should be asking questions.
Before the break, we're going to get back to it in the next segment, but you started to touch on the border as job one, that it may be the font of our gravest problems today. What are the problems you're seeing in our society that really have their genesis in the border insecurity?
Well, for example, fentanyl. That's been a major problem. I mean, the fact that we're losing so many young people in particular, but not just young people, sometimes completely innocent, you know, one-year-old that accidentally overdoses by crawling around and getting traces of it. I mean, this stuff is killer, and it shouldn't be here, and yet it's coming in, and we're really not doing much about it. And unfortunately, Biden's policies on the border have allowed this to happen. In addition to that, you've got human trafficking. You've got, unfortunately, humans being exploited, people being sex trafficked, all kinds of awful things, especially as a father of girls. I mean, I can't imagine how we're okay with this and how we're okay with allowing this to continue the way it is. I mean, the federal government is completely derelict in their duty on this, and we have to call them out, and we have to actually do something about it, not just talk about it.
I'm Hugh Hallman, joined by Lewis Hallman. We are hearing from the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Ben Thoma, in my view, one of the great leaders in our state who leads from a position of great character and qualities that are admirable. We'll be back in just a couple of moments. And if you'd like to join the conversation, you can reach us at 602-508-0960. We're here on KKNT 960 The Patriot. Thank you, Seth, for allowing us to sit in for you.
Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. I am Lewis Hallman, coming to you live from the 960 Patriot Studios with Hugh Hallman and Speaker Thoma, as we have been discussing the Speaker's remarkable origin story and plans for leadership in Arizona. But I had a question, actually, given our earlier conversation. It really does seem like your leadership style is precise and about building coalitions and really advancing the ball in an environment where that seems to be particularly challenging in a very polarized political environment. How is it possible to keep fighting that good fight?
Well, it is possible, not only possible, but important to keep fighting the good fight. I mean, look, talk to anybody that's been down there for any amount of time, and they will tell you there are really two kinds of people that get involved in politics. In any chamber, there's really two kinds of people. There are people there because they want to be somebody and they like being called honorable so-and-so. And then there are people there that are interested in doing something. And quite honestly, I've always been the latter. I'm interested in doing something. And, I've always believed that I grew up in the church, as I think sort of alluded to earlier, and I firmly, one of my favorite parts of the Bible, when I was little, I started to read, was Proverbs. For some reason, I just connected with it. And in Proverbs, you learn a lot of wisdom, and that's why I thought it was very helpful to me long term. But then it's also in Proverbs, and then also to some extent later in the New Testament, you hear the same idea. You'll know them by their fruit. In other words, you'll know them by the result. At the end of the day, I will be forgotten. You will be forgotten. Everyone will be forgotten. The question is, did you leave the place better than when you found it? And we could do what so many other people are doing, which is point fingers and say, you know, I would have done this, but for so-and-so I couldn't, you know, they're a rhino, they're not a real conservative, they're not a real Republican, they're not a liberal, they're not whatever, you know, point fingers and blame someone else, or you can take it responsibility. And by the way, we're the party of personal responsibility, and yet remarkably few of us actually take it. But that said, it's important to do it. Now, you mentioned this before. We've had, as I mentioned before, one-vote majorities for the last 6 years in the House and 4 years in the Senate. And yet I was able to create the flat tax and get it passed through the legislature with one-vote majorities. I was able to do in 2022 the universal school choice. We were the first in the nation to do
that. Remarkable work, by the way. Thank you.
Thank you. Everyone thought I was nuts, to be perfectly honest, including people that really loved the idea, because they just said it was impossible. You can't do this. This is not going to work, especially not with one-vote majorities. And, you know, I found a way to do it anyway. And it's not because I'm great. It's because I realized from the beginning that you continue to work on people, and you have to keep your word no matter what. There are people down at the legislature that like me. There are people down at the legislature that don't like me. What they'll never be able to tell you is that I lied to them. And that's incredibly important when you're working with colleagues, because, again, there's some people that just rub you the wrong way. We're all human beings. Some people you're going to naturally like, some people you're not going to like. You can't let that be the defining factor for the people that you have to work with. The legislature is not like a corporation. You hear this sometimes from business people saying, you know, I'm going to run for office and I'm going to run it like a business. Well, no, you won't. And the reason you won't is because you can't fire your colleagues. Well, like you can in a business setting. And so you have to acknowledge that you have to win your colleagues over and you have to convince them that it's okay. And final thought on this, it's not what you say that matters. It's not what you say that makes you a conservative or a Republican or whatever. It's what you do. And I think all of us as voters, now, like, take myself out of it, but all of us as voters should really sit back and go, who actually did something and what did they do? As opposed to who actually talks big and wants to do things, because as we all know, at the end of the day, talk is cheap.
Well, I'd go beyond that, and I'm going to give you a little credit that you are, because of your modesty and your ability to check your ego at the door and cause your colleagues to join you in something because they know it's more important to you to take responsibility and get something done than it is to get the credit. And you've often given others the credit for your accomplishments, and that's why I want to speak on two items specifically. So those conservatives thinking about voting in the CD8 election need to understand that as former Governor Ducey ran around eventually agreeing to the policies that the legislature was putting forward, and the man across the room from me specifically, Ben Toma, worked diligently day in and day out to craft the compromises and create a coalition of the willing to pass a flat tax for the state of Arizona, to pass ESAs, the Empowerment Scholarship. Without that kind of character and leadership and putting the credit to others while accomplishing this goal, the downside of giving away all of that credit is it's harder for people to remember your name when they go to the voting booth in the CD8 primary election. And they will be told all kinds of things about your record. But I can sit here and say, but for Ben Toma, we wouldn't have gotten a flat tax in the state of Arizona, and we wouldn't have ESAs now that allow students in our systems to choose the schools of choice that they and their parents think best fit them. And so as a voter, as a parent, as someone who's led in this community, I'm grateful for that demonstration of leadership. When you go to Congress, what is, besides the border, which we've talked about, what's the next big thing you want to try to attack?
Fiscal responsibility. We absolutely have to figure out a way to deal with that issue. You know, as I alluded to earlier, it only gets worse. If you don't deal with your fiscal problems now, it only gets worse. And if you think it's been bad up to this point on inflation, what do you think will happen when in 7 years Social Security is bankrupt? Or we can no longer pay some of our other obligations. It'll be chaos, not just here, but worldwide. It'll be worldwide chaos when that happens. And we cannot allow that to happen. We can no longer afford to just sit back and not do anything about some of these very, very serious issues. And again, you have to start with the border because we talked about that. But after that, it's got to be fiscal responsibility. We have to fix this problem, and we have to get back on the straight and narrow on the fiscal side.
How can regular people help? Those of us that are not potentially in a position where we can run for office. How is it possible that the rest of us could contribute in some small way to advancing the ball here?
Well, I think voting for good people is important here, and actually looking past the posts and the self-promotion and actually figuring out, like I said, who's actually done something mm-hmm. to fix these problems, and then having, you know, taking a certain amount of interest. Look, I think, and I don't mean to blame anyone else here because I'm totally against blaming other people at the end of the day, but every voter has to take a certain amount of responsibility for the way Washington is as well. Because when you ask people about Congress, they say, you know, it's always in the double, single digits maybe in terms of approval rating. But when you ask them about their congressman, they're great. So, well, hold on a second. If everybody's great, but yet the Congress as a whole is terrible, something's broken here. And you have to look into that a little bit more and hold your people accountable. Hold me accountable. Hold everyone else that's running for office accountable and say, what did you do while you were there? Don't talk about all the reasons that you couldn't be successful, but show me what you actually did while you were there.
I love that.
I appreciate the issue we're dealing with essentially is the moral hazard free rider problems that everybody gets value out of Congress for themselves and doesn't like anybody else doing it. And the reality is that we're all sitting at the trough. We're all part of the cafeteria plan here. And when each of us takes a dollar off that tray and somebody else does, we can't curse the others for behaving the same way we do. It is that kind of a problem.
As well as the notion that you cannot have liberty without responsibilities corresponding.
Absolutely.
Wholeheartedly agree.
So I'm Hugh Hallman with Lewis Hallman. We are enjoying the intellect and the character of Ben Thoma, the Arizona Speaker of the House, currently running for CD8 for the U.S. Congress. And we are going to continue that conversation in just a moment. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Seth Liebson Show. Thank you so much for joining us on this 4 o'clock hour as we've had Speaker Thoma join us in studio. I have been Lewis Hallman, and I've been joined by Hugh Hallman. Mr. Speaker, what do you have for us in closing today?
Well, look, it's not a surprise, I think, to anybody that's been paying attention to this race that this was not necessarily on my list of things to do. To run for Congress, in part because I love my family. I like spending time with them. They still like me. And as long as that continues, you know, you want to maximize that as much as possible. But I also do care deeply about this country. I care deeply about this state. And I see missed opportunities, quite frankly, at the federal level. And look, I've got experience. I mean, that's the reality. We've been in a one-vote majority, as was mentioned before, here in the state of Arizona. And yet, even in that context, we've been able to, under a lot of pressure, by the way, need I remind you all what happened in the 2020 election and 2022 election as well. So, even all that going on, there were ways to really move the ball forward on policy in amazing ways. And on the school choice side, as an example, I mean, we kicked off a firestorm that took the nation. I mean, 2023 became the year of school choice nationwide for many other states that followed, and that would only happen because we did it in 2022. So you can still do great things in any context, really, at the end of the day. And so I would encourage your listeners and all that vote to educate themselves, as always, and I know many of them do, and I appreciate that. In addition to that, you know, anything they want to know about, I mean, benthoma.com, it's on there in terms of
pretty
way
easy to spell
me.
Ben Thoma Thoma.
Correct. Yeah.
.com. Like, that's com. Right.
That's right. Yeah. It's pretty easy. Pretty easy to find the details there. And you know, obviously, I'd be honored to have your support and their support individually. And anything that you know, I'm always open to good ideas. Always open to good debate. Truthfully, And I think at the end of the day, you have to trust someone's character. If you're going to have them represent you, it matters. And as I've said now, I don't know how many times, results matter. Look at what someone has actually done.
Mr. Speaker, thank you so much for coming with us today. You've been a remarkable example of moral leadership and civic responsibility. And I want to express my gratitude for your work, not only on the flat tax and on the education pieces, but on what you're going to continue to do in the coming years after your assured victory. And so thank you. Thank you. Join us, please, in the next hour as we are going to turn our attention to the conflict in Israel and Palestine, talking about the definition of genocide as it has been employed by both sides to describe the situation. Hopefully we can get some more clarity there. But once again, thank you, Speaker Thoma, and please do not touch that dial. We will be right back. This is the Seth Liebson Show on the Patriot 960 KKNT.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.